Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
Gators Breakdown, episode 140, is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. Joining me on this episode of Gators Breakdown is Will Miles, founder of ReadAndReaction.com. You can find Will on Twitter at WillMilesSCC. And Will, back from vacation last week to Disney, and I think you're in Orlando now, right? And you maybe I'll find you at Disney later this week.
No, unlikely. I'm in an undisclosed bunker location because of all the reactions to the articles recently. But yeah, I got a conference I needed to come down to here for my regular job, and so I'm in Florida, so I'll be seeing a couple of people while I'm down here, and bumping up a little bit north to see my parents at some point this week too.
Very cool. It's funny, we had plenty of pictures from Disney, and you were waiting for the matching T-shirt picture. It didn't happen.
I'm very disappointed. I need to get your wife's cell phone number so I can text her about how this didn't occur. But I'm guessing she listened to the podcast and decided she wasn't going to do that to you.
Maybe so. There was a day we did have the matching T-shirts on, but we were so busy, and my daughter was off with my parents, so we all three weren't together all of the day. And then by the time we got together, it was not time and all that good stuff. And so we just kind of forgot about the picture.
Hey man, as long as you had a good time, that's one of those things where you'll remember that. She's only, what is she, three now?
She just turned four, so
she'll be 17 before you know it, man. So yeah. Enjoy it while you can, and next time you got to siphon this one off to the grandparents. That's what I try to do.
She was princess 4 days, so that day was a good time and a lot of fun. The whole trip was so, but you know, glad to be back. And I didn't get a lot of interaction last week because I was on vacation. I did want to. I was on Twitter a little bit and talking with other people, but I was kind of concentrating on spending time with the family and stuff. So that's kind of why I was out of the loop. And as you mentioned, it was a busy week for us on Twitter. And we'll get to that in just a second. But remember, you can find all your Gators Breakdown episodes on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you will find all Gators Breakdown episodes, as well as articles from the News for Jax sports team. That's news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. Also, you can listen on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube if you want the video version. Follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And when using their services, please rate and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. And to those of you who have left reviews on iTunes, thanks so much. It really helps the show get up there. 5-star rating. People will see that and check us out there. So, Will, without further ado, set the world on fire last week with our thoughts on the spring game. And like I said, I was on vacation, so I didn't really get a chance to go back and forth with a lot of people. We caught many by surprise with how we criticized the format of the game, and that conversation carried actually into this past weekend as well. You know, the conversation went on for about a week. Some other writers questioning our opinion, some fans questioning our fandom. Well, if we don't agree with your sentiment, don't question our fandom. Even in doing this podcast, I'm a fan first, and that will always be the case. But this podcast got traction because the fandom doesn't get in the way of the objective analysis that we bring. So I wear my orange and blue just as much as the next fan, and just because I throw criticism at a spring game doesn't make me less of a fan. It may just make me a different kind of fan from you. So. You know, with that, I don't think any less of Dan Mullen because of the spring game from the day he was hired or going into the spring game. I'm genuinely still excited to have him as the head coach of Florida. I think he'll do great things. So to the fans that had a great time and enjoyed what they saw at the spring game, I'm glad you did. For those who wanted to see more competition, I'm glad you spoke up as well. So yeah, I pride this podcast on being a fans podcast and sharing different sides of an argument. As much as we can, we'll do that in this episode as well. So all the people out there that commented, argued, berated, agreed, disagreed, thank you for listening, making it fun because you make this podcast what it is. And I'm kind of off my soapbox now, Will.
You know, a diversity of opinions is good. And so that's one of the reasons I encouraged a bunch of people to write rebuttals to my article on Read and Reaction. And, you know, I went back and listened to our podcast. I thought we were relatively fair. We were just disappointed in terms of what we saw. That's okay. You can be disappointed. You could have had a great time. That's fine. There were plenty of people I read who had a great time too, and plenty of people who reached out and said they had a great time. But I also had people reach out to me via email or via Twitter direct message and say, hey, I agree with you, almost in a hushed tone, like they were a Trump supporter in the Democratic National Convention or something. I mean, it was like, they were afraid of the blowback they were going to get. And it's interesting that people have been threatened by, you know, you and I having an opinion that's a little bit different than the company line. But, you know, that's what we do. Like, my goal with Read and Reaction, and my goal when I come on Gators Breakdown, is not to be positive. It's not to be negative. It's to be truthful. And that's what I hope you feel like you're going to get from me. And that's what I know they're going to get from you. Fans, it just means that we're being truthful. And sometimes that truth is we feel a certain way. Sometimes we'll be right. Sometimes we'll be wrong. When we're wrong, we'll say it when we're wrong. When we're right, hopefully we don't gloat too much and annoy you. So so anyway, you know what, man? It's all in good fun. It's just football. We're not deciding policy for bombing Syria or anything like that. So you know what? Everybody can have their opinions, but this blogger will still be out there writing. And, you know, we'll give everybody something to talk about, I'm sure, as, you know, when things that are positive happen, we'll let you know. When they're negative, we'll let you know. And, you know, if it's sort of in between, we don't know what to think, we'll let you know. So, you know, but I do think it's worth saying that, you know, that if you want an honest opinion, we're not going to be shy in giving that to you. And I think there's value in that.
Yep, you know, and we've been pretty much positive since Dan Mullen was hired. And, you know, this may have been the first criticism that was kind of thrown the way of what he's done so far. But, you know, I didn't think it was that major. It got kind of more, it caught fire more than I ever thought it would. I think that's part of it. I didn't necessarily see it go that route, but it did. I'm glad we got the feedback we got, you know, kind of, you know, gauging the interest in that there. But, you know, like I said, it's going to be fun. It's going to be about being a fan with the analysis that we can throw in. So, you know, it's first of all, it's going to be fun. And the moment it's not fun is the moment I won't be doing this anymore. But you guys out there make it fun. So, you know, thanks for the communication. Thanks for the back and forth. And all in all, I still have more of a good time with it than anything.
Oh, man, it's fun. Like, I oh, people can take their shots. That's fine. It is what it is. It's not like I make a living off of this. I do this because it's fun to interact. I do this because I like numbers and I enjoy looking at the numbers and trying to figure out what they mean. And, you know, I'm passionate, and so I'm going to be negative because that's what the situation requires, at least in terms of what I think. But like I said, the goal is to be truthful. And, you know, so it was the truth as I saw it. And, you know, you're going to get that from me. And, you know, I'm not going to be afraid to say it at this point. So that's.
Oh, I think you dropped out there a little bit, Will.
Yeah. Sorry about going right now. So apologize if we go in and out, but hopefully we'll be able to get this done.
Yep. All right, Will. So with that, you know, we went through spring practice, so we were excited about Dan Mullen and everything that he could bring to the Florida program. And through the 4 weeks of practice and the spring game itself, there was a lot of thought out there of expectations and have they changed from what we saw those 4 weeks in the spring game. And, you know, mine really haven't changed too much. I still pretty much have Florida pegged as about a 8-4 team. I went into spring hoping to see more from the quarterbacks and hoping one would take the bull by the horns and really impress, but we didn't get that. I did come away thinking the defense would be better than I thought. Some of the young linebackers like Rashad Jackson and Ventrell Miller make me feel better about that group. And I still feel, you know, Grantham can continue to get something out of defensive ends, the rush ends that can really help cause turnovers and putting opposing offenses in bad situations. You know, with that type of pass rush and UF secondary, I do expect turnovers to be a factor. But with still the major question of quarterback and, of course, offensive line to go along with that, I still can't put Florida above that 8 wins as it stands right now. You know, hopefully when fall and fall camp rolls around, we hear of those units really improving. But as it stands now, and if using 8 wins as the barometer, on the surface, I'd say they're closer. You know, just looking at it on the surface and the quarterback worry that still scares me. I still say they're probably closer to 7 wins than 9 wins until I see more out of those two units that have plagued Florida so much for over the years. But then I look at the schedule and the way it sets up, and I really can see a very possible path to 9-3. And you look at that schedule, and it's a great chance for a 4-0 start with Charleston Southern, Kentucky, Colorado State, and at Tennessee. Then comes the back-to-back games that can make the season a great season. You know, when you go to at Mississippi State and then hosting LSU, that Tennessee, Mississippi State, LSU, 3 games in a row, but I think you're really looking at, I think you have a chance of starting 4-0 with, capping with Tennessee there. But Mississippi State and then LSU, you split them, and I think you're fine. That's the first half of the season at best. At best, I could see Florida 6-0. That's possible with the schedule. I don't think none of those teams are certainly head and shoulders above Florida. I just think I see 5-1, there so far. Then come Vandy, Georgia. At this point, I'm at 2 losses on the season, as I think Georgia just has too much right now. But this is the year to get them with everything they lose. I do see Florida losing to one of Missouri or South Carolina, more than likely South Carolina, because they're going to be pretty good. And looking at Mullen, your first year head coaches often lose a game they're not really supposed to. But I also think FSU gets Florida again, but just barely. And just with like Mullen, I have to see how Taggart transitions to coaching at FSU. So there's my short synopsis of an 8-4 team. But going through spring practice, going through those 4 weeks, going through the spring game, not seeing what I wanted to see from the quarterback position. I wasn't expecting to get a lot of answers, but I was looking for a step forward. We still didn't really get that. So on the surface, I still say they're closer to a 7-win team. We're going back to what I said earlier, on the surface. But then looking at that schedule, it's still hard for me, with this improved defense, I can really see the team going 9-3. So my expectations not really change. I still say 8-4, but 7 wins, 9 wins. I think the schedule kind of really sets up for Dan Mullen to have some success in season one.
Yeah, I can understand that analysis. I think, it's one of those things where we haven't seen anything yet to really know. We're just putting our faith in the fact that Mullen in the past has gotten his teams to perform up to their recruiting ranking pretty well. So I think he averaged a 27 recruiting ranking in his time at Mississippi State, and they were 31st overall in the ESPN FPI. So typically his teams play up to the talent level, and Florida's talent is top 15 recruiting classes average over the last 4 years. And so you would expect that to be around where they finish, somewhere between 15th and 20th in the FPI. And that would be a 9-3 team or an 8-4 team. That's really what the expectation should be. Plus you have all the suspended players coming back who have come back to the team. So you've got some of the linebackers you didn't play last year, some of the new guys coming in, and certainly those are guys who Mullen picked specifically for the team and should be able to help out. I think expectations for what the season were, it was always sort of in that 15 to 20 range. I wrote earlier this year that anybody not having them in their top 25 preseason was being short-sighted. I still believe that. There are just some things in the last couple of weeks I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, and going back we did our initial reaction from the spring game. So since that time, we've been able to look at it a little bit more. Is there anything about the quarterback situation that we can put stock into that can be seen in a positive light? We've talked so bad about the quarterback situation for quite some time now. And as I said, I look for someone, and probably, going into spring, Felipe Franks, to take that next step. We had a podcast going into spring about not really counting him out, and how Dan Mullen's system is more situated to help a quarterback like him. We didn't get that step. Are you still feeling the same about the quarterback situation going into spring as coming out of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I stand by the quarterback breakdowns that I did as the best marker of what we can expect out of the quarterbacks. I mean, I think that is a much more representative look at what the quarterbacks are capable of than anything we would have seen during spring practices, spring scrimmages, or the spring game. That's the reality. You look at what they have on tape, that's what we're going to get. And that's okay for Felipe Franks to below okay. If you look at last year's film, you think Mullen gives him some improvement. Okay, well, then he's bordering on sort of acceptable. I don't think he's going to be like an All-American or anything like that based on what we've seen thus far. Kyle Trask has pretty limited film, but has been impressive in the games that he's played, but it's been blowouts. You know, Joe Burrow is somebody that I'm still sort of hoping that Urban Meyer kicks out the door. Just, I mean, it's nice to have another guy in the quarterback room if you can bring him in at this point. And based on some of the high school stats I look at and things like that, I think he's a good option. And then obviously everybody knows I'm a Tony Homer, but he's going to be wide receiver. And so that's not, it's not really a possibility. You know, the one thing we did talk about last week and I think we were relatively positive about was Emory Jones, and that he looked pretty good out there. And with his running ability, you can see a scenario where Emory Jones would take over early in the season, and that might be a real positive thing for Florida. And maybe you sacrifice one of those games earlier to get him in and get the experience that you're looking for. But, you know, he's got some talent. There's no doubt about that. But you can say the same thing about Franks. The question is he going to be able to execute the offense and execute it well? And we don't have any data that suggests that that's the case. But, you know, it's a blank slate with somebody like Jones, and he's somebody that I'd be interested in really paying attention to. If he came out and won the starting job in the fall, that would be pretty intriguing.
Yeah, and looking at this another way, and if somebody asked me the question, if, you know, looking at, and I said an 8-4 type of season. But the thing with that is, I don't really think it matters who the quarterback is for 8-4. If it's Trask, I can see 8-4. If it's Franks, I can see 8-4. You know, if one is one of those guys head and shoulder better than the other one, not right now. That's not what we see. Now we go into fall camp and we see, you know, when we really, and, you know, what we see or hear from that is, you know, kind of not worth much until we see the guy play in game one against Charleston Southern, and even not so much then. You know, you go to game two against Kentucky, and that's kind of and that Colorado State game is where, you know, that's not a cupcake Power Five opponent. So I think, you know, starting with Kentucky, Colorado State, and Tennessee, I think you'll get a good handle on the quarterback situation at Florida. But, you know, right as if I had to pick right now, I don't think Franks or Trask offer more wins over the other guy.
I don't know that we can say either way, right? Really, I mean, I think the fact that you basically say it's 8-4 with essentially what we're assuming is mediocre quarterback play, is really what you're saying, right? Is that your expectation is mediocre quarterback play, regardless of who's in their quarterback. Now, if a guy comes in and plays, you know, borderline elite, well, now the team can go 9-3, 10-2, and you have that possibility. I mean, it's just like it has for the past 8 or 9 years. It's going to hinge on the defense, and that's something that there are still some areas that need improvement. I mean, if you look at some of the recruiting that McElwain did under his regime, we can talk about that, especially at the linebacker position. You know, yeah, there are some guys there who look like they are positive changes from last year, but it doesn't mean that the situation's solved. And so I don't think we can expect this to be one of those defenses like 2015 or 2016. So the offense is going to have to put up a few points. And so even if the quarterbacks take a small step forward, it's going to have to offset the defense not being that elite top 10 unit like it's been, you know, until last year at least. And so we'll see whether they can do that or not.
Well, I think, you know, using the number 8 for over and under is kind of dangerous, because I think most people have pegged Florida as an 8-win team. I think that seems to be the kind of consensus out there. So, you know, if we used, you know, 7.5, where would you go, over or under that?
I'd probably go under. Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty at quarterback. I'm not sure that they'll be able to keep the quarterback upright. You know, we saw a lot of pressure in that spring game. Now, granted, it was split squads and all that sort of stuff, but we saw first team offensive linemen getting beat relatively often. And so, you know, are they going to be able to keep him upright? History says that's going to be an issue. They haven't been able to keep him upright since the season that Driscoll broke his ankle is the last time I can remember. The season before is the last time I can remember a Gator quarterback who started the season actually ending it. And so, you know, we'll see how that progresses and see whether they can keep the quarterback healthy. But if you can't keep him healthy, even if he's playing well, even if he wins the job, it's going to be a problem. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. And really, to me, you know, people have pointed to the running backs as being the key to the offense. Well, if that's true, then the offensive line's going to have to play well, because those are all integrated. Those are all correlated, right? And so we'll see. But I think that's really where some of the progress, and where Hevesy is going to earn his money, because that's where we're going to have to see some improvement if the quarterback play is you know, just average. If that's what we get from the quarterbacks, then I take under 7.5 based on what I've seen from the offensive line thus far.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when you said, I think it was that 2012 season when Driscoll did start and finish the season, but didn't he, like Jacksonville State, didn't he miss that game?
Oh, yeah. Well, we haven't had a quarterback healthy every year since.
Yeah, right. It's unreal. And, you know, I'm not going to pin all that on the offensive line either, but you're right. When those guys get hit time and time again, you know, some of them have just been bad luck and bad breaks, but. It is a crazy stat for Florida to go back and look at. You know, not one quarterback has started every game of the season.
Well, I mean, geez, we were down to Skylar Morenwig at one point. I mean, if that happens this year, we're going to have like Jalen Jackson in there playing, because I mean, they only got the three guys. So with Jake Allen transferring out, so. Yeah. You know, we'll see what happens. I think 8 is probably right. If you put it at 7.5, I'm going to take the under just based on what I've seen. It doesn't mean I'd be surprised if they win 9. I'd be really surprised if they win 10, because that really probably means the quarterback's taking a major step forward. And you would have thought we would have seen something like that during the spring, or we would have heard something like that during the spring. We haven't heard that. So, you know, but hey, maybe one of the guys really takes a step up and takes all the things he learned during spring camp and comes into fall really, really way ahead of everybody else. And if that's the case, then that's great.
Yep. And Will, I got a question not too long before we came on air here from Scott Sweat. And he goes, so you're talking about expectations here. And he goes, he keeps seeing where Mississippi State new coach is expected to win more games than Mullen in year one. Are they saying that talent at Mississippi State is better than Florida, or that Moorhead is a much better coach? And I only had a few minutes to kind of think about this, you know, kind of off the top of my head. Mississippi State is going to be good in spots that you have to be good in. They got Fitzgerald at quarterback, and if he comes back healthy, they can be really good. His backup, Keaton Thompson, showed flashes last season, especially when Fitzgerald went down. He played the last two games of the season against Ole Miss and the bowl game. So he showed flashes last season. And Will, and you brought up a good point about this. They have in general in college football, but they have a really good defensive front that will keep them in games with Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat. You know, those guys are elite SEC defensive linemen by what they've shown so far, and will carry Mississippi State. So they have a lot of close games. I think they'll have a lot of close games because they'll lean on the run game so much from the quarterback and the running backs, and their defensive line will control games. So in those two positions, I think they're better than Florida, certainly at quarterback and in the defensive line. I really like what they got there a lot too, but for sure I'd say Florida has better receivers, running backs, and a better secondary. So, and I'd say probably just off the top of my head, on the surface of it, pretty even everywhere else. And then Mullen did a really good job of setting that team up this year. So if he was still at Mississippi State, I don't know what the expectation would be. Would it be second in the SEC West behind Alabama? You know, probably fighting tooth and nail with Auburn a second. So I think with Moorhead coming in, they're probably definitely pegged third or fourth in the West behind Alabama and Auburn. But if Mullen had stayed at Mississippi State and what they have coming back, I think you'd see a lot of picks of them being second in the West.
Maybe. I think that would probably be a little bit aggressive based on what we've seen from recruiting and all that sort of stuff. I think on a pure talent standpoint, Florida has more talent than Mississippi State. I think there might be a few more elite guys, especially with CeCe Jefferson out on the defensive line, at least for some amount of time. It sounds like he'll be back for fall camp, and if that's mm-hmm. true, then great. But yeah, I mean, really, this is the old New England Patriots thing, right? I mean, the Patriots win every year because Tom Brady's their quarterback. The Colts used to win every year because Peyton Manning was their quarterback. I'm not saying Nick Fitzgerald is Brady or Peyton Manning, but I'm saying compared to the Florida quarterbacks, at least the track record, he's significantly better. And so you look at that and say, okay, if you've got a team with top 25 talent, a team with top 15 talent, but the team with the top 25 talent has a better quarterback, well, who would you pick? Right. in a head-to-head matchup. And that's really what they're saying, is they're saying that Florida Mississippi State game in Starkville The expectation is that Mississippi State's going to win that game. I don't necessarily see that. I think out of all the games that Mullen's going to come in extra amped for, that's probably one of them. And his players will probably feel that. And the players
you got to think Mississippi State's players will be too, though.
I can see that. But it's not one of those things where you beat somebody and you come in and it's a letdown game. Right? Yeah. It's not like this is after the Georgia game and, hey, they played Georgia close, or by some miracle they beat Georgia, and then they're coming into Starkville and get caught. It's not going to be something like that.
You know, they have Tennessee the week before, but like you said, with the connection of Mississippi State, there's no drop off there.
I mean, they'll be amped up for it. So you're going to get teams that are equally committed and equally focused. And when you do that, Florida has more talent. But there's the gap at quarterback. And so the question is, how close can Florida make that gap over the next 3, 4, 5 months before that game takes place? And if they close that gap significantly, Mississippi State's going to lose. If they don't close the gap, then Mississippi State will win.
Yep. So I got to find it here, Will. But we'll go ahead and move on. And also, since we're talking expectations here, expectations on the recruiting trail. And Will, in your latest article, you took a look into the 2019 class recruiting at this stage for Dan Mullen. And there are some reasons for worry and there are some reasons for optimism. So right now, as it stands for this 2019 class.
Yeah, it's funny. Everybody today seemed to think I was being negative about the recruiting. And I mean, I feel like I was just presenting the facts. So one of the things I started out doing was looking, and I looked at a bunch of 5-stars over the last 3 years. I looked at all the 5-stars over the last 3 years, so 87 players, and said, okay, when did they commit? And 24 of them committed prior to May 1st. So 28% of those guys committed before May 1st, which means that we haven't even gotten to May 1st yet. And there's still 72% of the guys out there, you would think, who are out there eligible to conceivably consider Florida. So there's no reason to panic at this point, because there are all those guys who haven't committed. And based on some other stuff I've done, I think this is probably pretty representative of the 4-star crop as well. With that said, when you look at where Florida is today, they're behind. And whether they're behind because this is Mullen's first real class where he's at Florida, or whether they're behind because Mullen's lagging behind in recruiting, or whether they're behind because the recruiting rankings don't accurately reflect the talent evaluation, is irrelevant. When you look at the actual statistics, they're behind. So Florida State has 10 recruits. 7 of them are ranked higher than Florida, at least on the 24/7 composite, 7 of them are ranked higher than Florida's highest rated recruit. Alabama has 8 recruits, 8 of them are ranked higher than Florida's. Georgia has 7. 7 of them are rated higher than Florida's recruits. So they're getting, like, at least at this early stage, Florida is behind. That is the reality. Now, we can ignore it. We can say, today ESPN went and upgraded some of Florida's recruits, which is true. And Mullen has proven to be a very good evaluator of talent when he's been at Mississippi State. I don't doubt that. However, when you look at a recruiting class as a whole, you have to take into account the fact that Georgia has like 3 of the top 13 guys in the country. And so bringing in guys who are ranked 200, 250, and 300 is great, but it's not competitive with Georgia. And that's sort of what I was saying towards the end of the article is, there is reason for concern because Florida needs to have top 3 classes to compete for national championships. And that's what Mullen has said the standard is. He said the standard is not just SEC championships, it's national championships. And if that's true, he's going to have to beat Georgia, and he's going to have to beat Alabama, and he's going to have to beat Florida State on the recruiting trail as well as on the field.
Yeah, and also, what you said in there, just because there's concern – is still not reason for panic. Concern is not panic at this point in time. And as you said, this is as it stands now. There's still time to figure all this out. And as you said, we actually saw some movement today. 4 to 7 commits or 4 stars on ESPN. But I still mostly go by the 24/7 sports composite. And that's where Jalen Jones is the only 4-star committed right now. Got his 4-star today. But we do have some camps coming up, spring evaluations for coaches and recruiting services will update. Of course, there's a season still to be played as well. And Will, and a lot of pushback so far, definitely that we've seen so far is we have to see what kind of product Dan Mullen puts on the field to see a bump in recruiting. It wasn't in your article, but you have said on here that the optics of Florida football do matter. And I do think the optic of the trend of bad offensive play for so many seasons does contribute in some way to the difficulty of recruiting. And I think in this case of Mullen, many want to compare him to Kirby Smart and what he did at Georgia in his first year coaching and then his second, you know, bump class. And as you pointed out, he had six commits before May 1st, five of whom were top 200 players. He then signed eight players prior to December 1st and another 10 before signing day. So Kirby Smart was able to sell before the season, during the season, and after the season. And I think a couple of reasons for that is he wasn't dealing with a trend of putrid offense for many seasons in a row, was playing a true freshman quarterback in Jacob Eason that was showing, you know, some promise, had the five-star hype, one of the top players in the nation's hype. And plus, you know, not to throw shade at anybody, but Kirby Smart's just a darn good recruiter. And he, you know, he already had great relationships with recruits that he was recruiting to Alabama and can now sell them on Georgia. So, you know, Mullen's already behind on caliber of player going into the summer months, but it could be, you know, it could be the season where if Florida shows promise on the field, then the elite targets start taking notice and want to come. You know, I mentioned this Florida schedule earlier, and there's plenty of time early in the schedule to show promise against good teams. You know, Tennessee may not be a good team, but it's a team that still gets noticed. You know, you go to Knoxville and look impressive, then follow that up with a road win at Mississippi State. The next week after that, then the wheels get in motion. But I think we could all look at that. You go back and look at that 2015 Ole Miss moment, and you know where U.S. showed promise before and then blew the lid off. And that game could be when LSU visits on October 6th. You know that game is always hype. If Florida's showing promise, and you know that game will be lined up with recruits and targets being a big home game, and if Dan Mullen can get his team to play the way he got Mississippi State to pound LSU like they did last year, that could be when, you know, the recruiting floodgates open. So, you know, kind of combining that and kind of looking at it, you know, there's, I believe, and I've kind of thought this, there's two types of recruiters, guys who can sell vision and then guys who can sell results. You know, Spurrier wasn't a big time in your face recruiter, but, you know, he let his on the field results do most of the talking for him. You know, eventually the great recruiters are able to sell both. And I'm in the mind that great recruiters most of the time are just great recruiters. They're just, you know, they know what to do. They know how to sell a vision and they go just recruit. But I do think the optics of Gator football from the putrid offense that we've seen for years now, it hurts a little bit. And I think Mullen right now is more of a show results type of recruiter.
Yeah, this is where I take a little bit of umbrage with some of the people who criticized us about our spring game review, in that before we said optics matter, I think that's true. And so we were critical because we thought it was important that Florida put their best foot forward and the first showing of this new Dan Mullen regime. Hey, let's go out there and show that the offense is really taking a step forward, or at least show that we're going to be aggressive on offense and we're going to go out there and check it downfield. And if you struggle, people say, hey, you know, that it's all part of the learning process, but at least it's not fake. That was sort of my biggest complaint there. And now you've got those same people who complained about our spring game review now saying that, well, Mullen just needs to show it on the field and then the recruits will come. Well, which one is it? Because it's not consistent. Either you need to show it on the field. Now you can say, oh, it's just a spring game. It's just a spring game. But that was an opportunity to show people what you had and you decided to pass it up. And so that was my criticism is you used an opportunity to practice, used an opportunity to show people what you got, to have fun. And that may turn out to be the right thing to do. I don't know. I'm not plugged in enough with the system to be able to tell you that. But it was an opportunity to show results on the field and you didn't do it. And now you're coming back and saying, well, don't criticize the recruiting because we need to show what's going to happen on the field. Oh, okay. The other thing you said there is, you know, the reality is Kirby Smart's Georgia. And you can say, oh, well, he's a great recruiter, and say, you know, we can't compare Mullen to him, but Mullen has to beat him. And so you have to compare him to Kirby Smart. You have to compare him to Nick Saban, because to win the SEC championship and to win national championships, he's going to have to beat those guys. And if you look at Georgia, and I know people were pointing out the ESPN upgrades in Florida's recruits today, hey, I'm happy that those guys are four stars now. It's a good step in the right direction. But Georgia has three of the top 18 guys in this year's ESPN 300 who were verbally committed. They had four of the top 15 in 2017. They had seven of the top 25 in 2018. Bama has five of the top 100 this year. Florida State has four of the top 120. Florida has two in the top 300. That's where we are right now. It doesn't mean it's where we're going to end up. It doesn't mean their floodgates won't open. A lot of Florida's targets just aren't committing until December and January. And again, that was part of the article, is that's when those guys start to really commit. And so January 1st is when you really start to take a look at this stuff and say, is it important? However, it's kind of like being, if you're watching the Masters and the guy's five strokes down, but he's only down to one guy, all right, he can probably catch up to him. If he's five strokes down and there's 17 guys in front of him, well, one of the guys is going to shoot a 65. He's got no shot. And so that's kind of, you know, if Georgia closes strong, the gap gets wider. And for the last four seasons, Georgia has averaged 17 and a half blue chips, according to the 24/7 composite. Florida has averaged 9 over the last 4 years. So when you look at that, Georgia is, if Georgia gets any coaching at all, any development at all, they can afford a ton of attrition because they've brought in an unbelievable amount of talent. And so for people saying that Florida just needs to show it on the field, well, what happens if they go out there and all that talent at Georgia just rolls them over? Like, what are you going to say at that point? Like, at some point, you have to push the vision. It's a chicken or the egg thing. If you go out and you lose, yeah, you're not going to get the recruits. You got to get the recruits to win. So really, you got to sort of sell that vision to start with. And again, this isn't a criticism of Mullen today. I don't think there's any reason to panic. I just think it's a realistic assessment of where we are today. It's a realistic assessment of the conference that Mullen has decided to come in and coach. And it's a realistic assessment of someone who came in and set these expectations. People keep accusing me of having unrealistic expectations. He's the one who said SEC championships aren't good enough. We need national championships. And when you look at national championship recruiting, you have to have, for the most part, a top four or a top, well, from 2006 to 2016, this was Rivals rankings, because back when I did this, it was a while ago. But every team that won a national championship had a top four class nationally. Two of them, everybody had a top two class except for two, and that was Clemson in 2016 and then Auburn in 2010. And Auburn had Cam Newton as the quarterback, as a transfer, and Clemson had Deshaun Watson, who, when you look at his college stats, was a transcendent quarterback. So if Florida has a transcendent quarterback, I will defer to people and say that top 10 recruiting classes might be enough to win the national championship. But until they have that guy, they need top three.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure I ever really expected a top three finish, and that's just because I don't expect it with the Florida brand right now, with whoever the head coach is. Can you get that high right now with Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State, Clemson out there? Now, I do absolutely expect the top 10 finish, and you know, if you ask me right now, I'm saving around seventh or so. You know, and at that point, you do have to get, you know, probably couple spots higher when you're looking at, you know, kind of what you're saying, when you look at, you know, going in like a 4 year period. But, you know, I think you get around seven, six, you know, fifth, somewhere around that point, you know, for cycles, continuous cycles, you know, while you're a little bit behind the top tier, I expect coaching to be the difference on the field then. And as you said, you know, a lot of it's still finding a quarterback. And if you can find a transcendent quarterback, as you said, then I definitely agree. You don't have to necessarily be a top one, two, or three, a recruit year in and year out. But now I do think you get around that sixth, seventh range, I think you're close enough to where some coaching can kind of be the difference on the field then.
Well, we're going to have to hope so, because yeah, that's pretty much where I think they're going to end up, and that's okay. It's not anything terrible to end up sixth or seventh. I know Bill has talked a lot about being top three in the conference. I think that's very, very important. I mean, maybe you're conceding that Alabama and Georgia are going to out-recruit you at least in year one, but LSU and Auburn and Mississippi State cannot, and that's the reality. So a top 10 class in many conferences is great. If you're in the ACC and you have a top 10 class, that probably means you're second in the conference. Yep. And Florida State and Clemson just sort of flip every other year. One of them is sixth and one of them is ninth or something like that.
But here's the thing. You have Miami there now.
Well, you do. And so what you're going to find is that Clemson is going to have to see an uptick in the recruiting to consistently win the ACC, whereas they didn't have to do that before. Same thing with Fuente at Virginia Tech. If he starts bringing the recruiting up at Virginia Tech, you're going to see one more competitor in the ACC starting to make some noise. So, but I mean, it's nothing compared to the SEC. I mean, the right. SEC, darn near every program is in the top 25 every year. And so from a recruiting perspective, from a talent perspective, there's no doubt that the SEC has more talent than anybody else. And really, to be a top three in conference, you probably need to be fifth or sixth nationally, just based on the way things typically break out. So we'll see. I mean, so at the Swamp Thing tweeted at me today. He said he looked at the top 500 players in the 24/7 composite, and he counted 56 who were interested in Florida. And so to make this class what I would consider top tier, you need 18 of those guys, which means Mullen has to hit on 32% of those targets. And we'll see if he can do it. If he can, I'll come on here and mea culpa. I doubted you back in April, and everybody told me I was wrong, and I'm wrong, and we'll see where we end up. But I think we're probably looking somewhere between 7th or 8th. It's not terrible, but a lot of it depends on where the other SEC teams end up as well. I do think that it needs to be top three in the conference to be considered successful.
All right, Will. So it was a hot topic and thought out there today. So I did throw up a poll. And is it too early to be worried about recruiting for the 2019 recruiting class for the Gators? And out of 824 votes, 72% said it's too early to worry, 28% starting to get worried. So a lot of feedback on this one. So it might be too many tweets here, but you guys, you know, took the time to send them to us. So I'll get to as many as I can. Tony Agolini says, I'm not a recruiting guy at all, but if I was a 17, 18-year-old kid, I would want to see some proof on the field this season before I commit to a new staff taking over after a 4-7 season. Aaron Hodges says, I've been saying the same thing since the day he was hired. Then when he let Sider go, I began to worry a little more. The staff doesn't have a lights-out state of Florida recruiter, and you need at least three, in my opinion. So, Will, you know, right there, you know, two opposite ends of the spectrum right there.
Well, again, a diversity of opinions. And that's what we're going to get in April because there's no games. So really what this proves is that anyone who just says that the other side is wrong doesn't know what they're talking about because we're divided 70-30, and it's probably the same way with the spring game stuff. So enjoy. Yeah. The opinions are great. We love it.
Matthew Christian agreed with Tony. He said Tony is on the money. If Florida can go 8-4 this year with Emory getting meaningful playing time and other recruits getting plugged in and playing quickly, would go a long way with recruiting. Pi May go at Go Gators for life. It was my biggest concern with the hire. He can't keep taking three-star kids. He's not going to compete at UF with the same talent as Mississippi State, but so far that all seems capable of landing. Lake City Gator, even more reason to be concerned. We are making max recruiting look desirable at the moment. What makes it worse is that our rivals are running circles around us. It has to get better fast. Dustin Woolbright, when it's 10 months before National Signing Day, it's absolutely too early to worry about it. Too much can happen in the future for fans to let their McElwain PTSD to get them worked up.
Maybe that's what it is, man. Maybe I'm punchy from the McElwain era. I got burned on him pretty bad because I defended him probably longer than most people did. I thought he was a really good in-game coach.
Did. Yeah.
At least for the first 2 years, I thought he was a pretty good in-game coach. I thought he was going to get a fourth year until stuff really started to get screwy. But all that strength and conditioning stuff, it feels like a lot of the media knew that was going on, and we didn't hear about it till after he was gone. Same thing with him not really getting along with Strickland. All that stuff came out after that. If I'd have known that he wasn't getting along with anybody in the program, if I'd have known that the guys were going to Planet Fitness on Sundays to work out, I would have had a different opinion of the guy. So maybe it is. It's my McElwain PTSD. That's what it is. So I'll try to put a positive spin on the next one so people could say I've been healed.
Seth Kegley, if UF wasn't getting a lot of guys on campus and didn't have a new buzz going on with recruits, then I would be worried. But it sounds like there is a lot of interest in Florida with most of the top guys just have to close the deal. Kayla Kopta, another overreaction before the season has even happened. Mississippi State is not the same pedigree that Florida is. With that being said, we have to earn our way back, and Mullen will show progress from the mess he was gifted, and the recruits will come. I'm not worried. And then, Will, I took some from, you having thoughts you sent your way about your article. So I took some from that as well. Nathan Thayer, he goes, solid info, good read. It's still early, as you mentioned in the article. I think Mullen will close on some top-end talent, but I don't think we crack top three. I think UF will sit somewhere between 7-10 ranked recruiting class, which I am okay with. We've seen worse with McElwain. Sean Steed, I was hoping for a Trey Sanders commit to get the ball rolling at the spring game. Still a lot of time, though. Matt got all these commits at Friday Night Lights. We have plenty of time. And a few more here at Lowkey 850. The staff is mediocre on the trail, and that's clear at the moment. Whenever you get pushed in by a guy who's three games below 500 on the trail, that's not a good sign going forward. I think he's talking about Willie Taggart there. It's a long time until January, but I'll be surprised if we finish top 10. No relation at Stinkmeaner 229. Mullen and Taggart was being compared when both got hired from a win-loss perspective and who got the better offense. No excuses for Mullen's class to be that far behind Taggart since the numbers favored Mullen. Will, and that's a point I want to bring up about Taggart, and you know, I've kind of shared this. You know, when we were going through the Florida coaching search, Willie Taggart's name was brought up a lot for the Florida coaching job as well. You know, and then Florida goes Dan Mullen, Florida State goes with Willie Taggart. And, you know, part of the reasons Taggart's name was brought up was because of the relationships he had in the state of Florida from his time at South Florida and you know, his recruiting prowess. And you know, and also kind of turning that program around. He went to Oregon, was recruiting the state of Florida really well out there at Oregon as well. So honestly, it's no surprise to me to see how good Willie Taggart is recruiting. You know, yes, there is some catch up for Mullen to do at the moment, but you know, I don't necessarily, seeing FSU and Taggart have the success they're having on the trail right now is actually just kind of, it's no surprise to me, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, something can be true and completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, Mullen has to beat Taggart on the field and in recruiting. And you're always going to be competing against people who have different kinds of relationships. I mean, you could say the same thing about Kirby Smart. He's got stronger relationships in the state of Georgia than Mullen does. You say the same thing about Nick Saban. He's got stronger relationships in the state of Alabama than Mullen does. Doesn't matter. He has to beat them. And if he doesn't beat them, then he's not going to be around for very long. That doesn't mean that I'm saying after a year he's going to be gone. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the reality is when you're a head coach in the SEC at a blue blood program and your fans expect you to – like winning the SEC East is not good enough. Like that was made abundantly clear to Jim McElwain, is that that's not good enough. And so – you know, he's going to have to outperform these guys, and eventually he's going to have to outperform them on the recruiting trail as well. Otherwise, what will end up being is the Auburn of the East. And so, I mean, Auburn's won national championships recently. They've had very good teams recently. But if you look at their performance against Alabama, they have been dominated by Alabama over the last 10 years, ever since Saban took over. I don't have the stats with me right now. I meant to bring them. But basically, Alabama outscored Auburn by more than 100 points ever since Saban took over in that Iron Bowl rivalry. And that's what's going to happen to Florida and Georgia if Florida doesn't pick things up. And that's what's happened in the Florida-Florida State rivalry over the last 4 or 5 years, is Florida State has just ran roughshod over Florida because they've had more talent. And, you know, last year was a perfect example where both quarterbacks struggled. I mean, both quarterbacks were bad, and 2 years ago it was the same thing, and Florida had an opportunity to win, just couldn't do it. A few years ago, when Jameis Winston was throwing interceptions every two times he dropped back, Florida wasn't able to take advantage. And so the offensive futility and the lack of talent and the lack of development, quite honestly, on that side of the ball has really hindered Florida over the last few years, and it's going to continue to so long as the recruiting doesn't pick up. So it's going to have to, or the fans will be unhappy.
Yeah, and I think that's just more of what I was pointing to, and I couldn't really get to my thought, was I just think that kind of caters to why there's such a fast start under Taggart for FSU. You know, they're already having relationships. They're already recruiting the state at Oregon. You know, he had an ability to say, hey, I'm at Florida State now. You don't have to go all the way across country. You can just come right down the road. So, you know, that, like you said, it would definitely eventually have to change. That's not an excuse for forever for Mullen. You know, I think FSU's recent success on the field and Taggart's recent time in the state of Florida at USF recruiting the state for Oregon, I think, you know, can kind of play a role in for the fast start for FSU there. Sway be swaying. Just a couple, a few more thoughts here since you guys sent them. I'll get to them. People are getting ridiculous. It's April. The first signing day isn't till December. Relax, people. Hashtag let Mullen work. Jessica B. Definitely feel like it's way too early to start panicking. We haven't even played an actual game yet. There's still a lot of buzz around the program. So I guess until that dies down, I remain optimistic. Charlie O, depends on expectations. If you expect the top five class, it's time to be worried. If you expect the top 10 or top 15, there's plenty of time. Matthew Christian, I don't think Will is totally wrong here, but I will say this. The Gators brand and program has never been lower than it is right now. Mullen has to battle that and never coaching a game as the head coach here too. And that's it. So, Will, definitely we hit on both sides there. The poll was definitely slanted into it was slanted way more into it's definitely not time to start panicking. But, you know, you read the comments there and you get them from both sides.
Well, and I don't think it's time to panic either. I don't. I think that by the time January 1st comes around, we will have a much better idea of where this class stands. I think it's going to be a struggle to get the class into the top three. I think it's really going to take some special recruiting by Mullen to get this into a top three class. But if you look at what Florida coaches have done in the past, their bump class has been top three. So Zook was number one, Meyer was number two, Muschamp was number three, and McElwain was number 12. And if you look at Zook, he had 6 5 stars. Meyer had 3. Muschamp had 3. McElwain had 0. And so, you know, it seems like based on where we are right now that Mullen is probably going to be in between Zook, Meyer, and Muschamp and McElwain. He won't be as bad as McElwain. He won't be as good as those other guys. And so his coaching acumen is going to have to show on the field. And I think people are right that when you see performance on the field, when you see the offense put up 45 against a real opponent, then the perception starts to change and people say, yeah, I can see myself going there. It is what it is. I mean, like I said, the whole point of the article is to say, don't panic yet. But the reason I wrote the article is I had people messaging me asking, should I panic? And it sort of came from the standpoint of, well, when did Urban Meyer start to get recruits? And you look at it and Percy Harvin and Tim Tebow and Brandon Spikes all signed in that early December, early January timeframe. And so at no point am I saying you need to panic. What I am saying is that you look at it right now and you're behind. And when you look at the coaches who were in the SEC at the time Urban Meyer was putting together that class, it was significantly less star-studded than it is now. So Phil Fulmer and Steve Spurrier were probably the best coaches in the East. There were some guys I didn't even remember had been coaches, Rich Brooks at Kentucky. You know, Stoops may not have that as an elite program, but he certainly has a much better status than Rich Brooks does, or Rich Brooks did. So, there's work to do. I don't think anybody would doubt that. I mean, I think objectively, when you look at the facts, Florida's behind today. That doesn't mean they'll be behind in February, and that's really what counts. But I think it's fair to take a look at it and say, all right, at what point do we need to start getting concerned? And so, you know, people can start sending me Xanax come August or September, man.
Well, this is what we get when we talk recruiting in April, but it has to be done.
Again, people are asking me the question.
Oh, yeah, I believe you. I've gotten it too. Yep.
You know, I mean, you guys are asking the question, and we're trying our best to answer the questions in an objective way using data, but also using sort of our perception in terms of where the program is and where it's headed. And I'm not willing to just say, oh, well, let's just trust the process. I mean, you know, I believe that that process is more important than your day-to-day results. Again, that's one of the reasons I was disappointed that they just gave up a practice for the spring game is that, you know, that practice can be important. Of course, you could make the argument. This was actually the most convincing argument somebody made to me was that having fun was part of that process, that you had to give the guys a break. You had to sort of lighten the mood. I can actually buy that. Like, hey, okay, if that's part of the process, if that helps get buy-in from the players, if that helps get buy-in from recruits, if that helps get buy-in from the alumni and the fans, that's great. Okay, now we're there. Well, okay, so recruiting, it's all process. So what does the process look like? They've had plenty of guys on campus. At some point, they're going to have to close them, and we'll see whether they can do that in December or January. But, you know, this didn't just come out of left field. This came because fans are starting to get a little bit on edge about it. And so the question is, should they be? And I think there's reason to be concerned, but I don't think there's reason to be massively worried. But at the same time, when you see other programs sort of jumping out there early, it does cause people to be a little bit uneasy.
Yep. Will, what you working on something next for readandreaction.com?
I don't know, man. I got to find something else to tick off the fan base, apparently. So I'll probably write about how I want to, like, you know, do something evil to puppies or something. Just to
you might get plenty of feedback from this one too, where you can just throw another reaction article up.
Look, if we're not willing to listen to other people and listen to their opinions and say, hey, I agree or I disagree, and here's why on a factual basis, if all we're going to do is throw out attacks and say, you know, oh, you're just a blogger, or say, oh, you know, you're lying to people because you need access, like whatever, like it doesn't get us anywhere. I mean, come after the ideas. If the ideas are flawed, then that's fine. I'll revise them. I am not immune to being wrong. I'm wrong all the time. My wife reminds me of that all the time. So, you know, come at me with facts and I'll be happy to take a look at it. And if I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong.
Yeah. And I kind of want to extend on what you were saying about, you know, it being in the plan to have fun. And, you know, I did think about that a little bit as well. And, you know, going back to Mullen's press conference, his hiring press conference, and he said, you know, when January rolls around, it's not going to be fun anymore. You know, when we hit that strength and conditioning, it's not going to be fun anymore. So, you know, from January to the spring game, you know, maybe it was, you know, the grind and, you know, and getting the body right and getting the mind right and all about football and all about getting that process of it. And for one day, Mullen wanted to go and let it loose, you know, and it's like I said, I was never blaming him for what took place. It just wasn't what I expected. So, you know, we can all move on from that now.
Well, until he sets some more expectations. I mean, you know, he's the one who said the Gator standard is, did we push ourselves to be the absolute best we can be and take ourselves to become the absolute best we could be? And then talking about the expectations at Florida, said, I understand those expectations. I embrace those expectations. And I guess this might sound crazy, but I probably have higher expectations for our football program than anybody else. So I have high expectations for what he's going to do. I have high expectations for how he's going to deliver for the program. And so if he has those expectations, he'll have no problem with anything I've said.
Well, this episode was about expectations. So there we go. They're still high. They're still high from everywhere.
Hey, man, it's all good time. It's all fun. Nobody's going to know anything till September anyway. So yeah. We'll wait to let people call us idiots then.
All right, that's Will Miles. You can find Will on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. And as we mentioned before, his work at readandreaction.com. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to Gators Breakdown.